Publisher Parish drives much of academic life. It has its origins in hard science, where the first to get an experiment, finding, or theory into publication won the prize. Other academic disciplines followed suit by imitating this system. This structure has developed a style of academic writing and a vetting process that are both by now antiquated and suspect. We are all caught up in this bond from time to time, me included. Fortunately, publishing is evolving and more, supplementary multimedia are requested as part of the publication procedure. Audience share and economics drives most of these changes, but that doesn't mean that it isn't a good time to take advantage of this expansion of the opportunities for academic outputs. Wikipedia recently cautioned on Twitter, about 200,000 academic journals are published in English. The average number of readers per article is 5. Funders are now looking for outcomes from their investments that demonstrate how we will affect change in the wider world, that is, the world beyond the very few other academics who happen to read a journal article. This climate of flux presents opportunities to get the products of our alternative methods of dissemination of social science data to wider audiences to popularize research. This is why I now revisit one of my earlier cracks at audiovisual script writing and production, the one about Princess Margaret, here today. Why popularize research? Personally, one result of the current academic climate is that I'm less interested in writing that does not communicate directly with an audience and include myself in that narrative. Somewhat reluctantly at first, therefore, I began to explore autoethnography and its potential for more personal communication with an audience and the platforms that I might use in order to reach that audience. I realized that all I really have to share with anyone else is my own experience. It may be flawed and or of little value to anyone else. For these reasons, I try to write and produce for various media in a way that will be of some use to others in their own work. I attempt to accomplish this with some skill and craft to popularize it at the same time. The natural follow-up for me was to revisit the arts and humanities for potential tools that might enrich this transition. Filmmaker Jean-Luc Godard is often credited with having once said, "It's not where you take things from, it's where you take them to." In my best autoethnography, I am actually a minor character and or a conduit to a time, place, and other people. I become fictionalized through writing. I am the sorcerer who reminds audience of themselves. In terms of visual representation of such stories, I become a keen observer of lives, allowing cultural images to become private and iconic. These remembered images twist and turn and eventually morph into various ways to be included as my own graphic memories. These visual mashups are truly ethnographic. Indeed, our visual memories can be imbued with both intense cultural and personal meaning. This is the visual autoethnography that I hope to represent in my work. Along with exploring visualizations of research data over the past 10 years or so, I have also experimented with writing performatively, or rather, representing in text what I'm trying to accomplish imaginatively. Several examples include the results of an interview with Mary Gergen, the script for an audiovisual production about Klaus Riegel and Kenneth Gergen, a very early piece about Akira Kurosawa and Jiro Transcendence, and, of course, the script for the one about Princess Margaret. I think it is important to revisit the initial motivations behind these early efforts and even try to recapture a bit of their naivete and my initial enthusiasm for finding innovative ways of expressing my scholarship. As I labor to become more sophisticated and skillful in my productions, it is important for me not to forget the initial struggles and uncertainties that are documented by those early attempts. This is the reason behind another screening of the one about Princess Margaret here today. Why was this particular medium chosen? But what about Princess Margaret, like many of my early pieces, involved being presented with a particular puzzle or challenge, and then finding the tools from the arts to respond to such questions. In the case of the one about Princess Margaret, it is important to recall that the production was built in PowerPoint, testing the software's potential to its limits, then converted to video. My initial query was, how can humor be used to capture time, place, and culture, and how will the results measure up to scrutiny as autoethnography? Thus my personal leap into autoethnography and the development of performative social science began with a research question. I did not suddenly decide to transform into a graphic illustrator, scriptwriter, or filmmaker. I remain a social scientist with a particular story to tell or message to get across by exploring which media will best help me to accomplish that. I don't worry about whether I'm exceptionally good at the use of a specific medium, but rather wonder if that means will serve the purpose at hand. I then begin the struggle with a specific new means of communicating. This process itself holds many of the joys and frustrations of each project, but also the opportunities to really explore the creative process. Many who have turned to performative social science have shifted to the arts for both inspiration and practical assistance in answer to our own frustrations with more standard research practices. Perhaps typical qualitative academic methods have become shopworn, routinely slotting vast amounts of data into themes and then banging on about rigor comes to mind as an example. Possibly the problem lies with our diffusion of data. Do we write too routinely about the evocative without knowing what it is that is being evoked, or and how, or better yet, what our work might provoke instead? Yes, we turn elsewhere, aptly so. The arts encourage us to be at the forefront of change and innovation in academia, challenging the status quo and moving our fields forward, the rightful place of scholarship. What is performative social science? Is performative social science art or social science? It isn't either. It is a fusion of both, creating a new model where tools from the arts and humanities are explored for their utility and enriching the ways in which we research social science subjects and or disseminate or present our research to audiences. This does not mean that we simply put on a play or make a film, and I need to constantly be wary of that pitfall myself these days in lieu of the increasing amount of my own cinematic output. It certainly isn't taking interview transcriptions, leaving out a line or two here and there, rearranging it on the page in stanza format, mimicking poetry, and then passing it off as poetic inquiry. Even worse than calling ourselves poets. It isn't thinking that our lives are so precious and unique, the snowflake phenomenon, that surely the world wants us to dramatize them, too often through embarrassing intimate performances of overcooked angst. Typically to a captured conference audience, academics present these hysterics by crawling around the floor for half an hour or so and calling it dance, or by producing a monologue that seems never to have a narrative arc or conclusion. As audience members, we often wish we had chosen the parallel book launch with complimentary sharing instead. In its place, let us return to what we already know quite well, academic research. I recall the standard rule of thumb suggestion that we make to postgraduate students all of the time. Find a research method that best fits the research question. This imperative applies to performative social science as well. Within the vast richness of the arts and humanities, which lens, device, technique, or tradition might deepen our research process or expand our dissemination plan? Is it a good fit to the questions? Do we automatically put on a play or make a film from our research data because we are so many frustrated actors or film directors, without ever asking which art form best fits the research question or the data that it has produced? What lessons have been learned so far? Funders are currently encouraging researchers to find ways to reach wider audiences with their findings, impact factor. And because of this, we are beginning to look beyond academic journals or narrow academic subject groups, for example, delegates at specialist conferences or preaching to the choir. Funders now want to know the benefits of our research to society and how it might affect the social order, the potential outcome of our efforts. Performative social science, when it is at its best and humming along, is a synthesis that provides answers to many of these very requirements. Ideally, our audience should be almost unaware of the scenes where we have cobbled together in-depth, substantial scholarship with artistic endeavor. In my estimation, part of doing performative social science is not only in the breaking down of the old boundaries, but also in discarding the old expectations and frameworks of what research is supposed to resemble after it is finished. Nonetheless, we are researchers. We are not actors, directors, filmmakers, dancers, or poets. There are many opportunities and outlets and frustrations and roadblocks for those who wish to pursue those professions. We can learn a great deal from these folks who often find it necessary to wait tables and do other menial jobs in order to pursue their dream profession. They may help us look at our own field through new lenses, but let's not insult them by falsely assuming their hard-earned mantles. In return, a word of caution to artists who might be drawn to working with researchers. The world of academia is not simply a new venue for you to put on a play, dance a dance, or publish a poem. There are both constraints and opportunities in the academic world as well, which we are happy to share with you through our collaborations. Through interfaces with both practitioners and practices from the arts and humanities, opportunities are presented to work with social science material and expand its means of production and popularization to novel and creative levels. This requires the fusion mentioned earlier. This necessitates cooperation and collaboration. Communication and common ground are central to successful partnership and union. The intuitive aspects of shared culture, coupled with a more universal response to life's tribulations and injustices, and therefore artistic expressions of these emotive components, compete for resolution with the more rigid academic, ethical frameworks and methodological constraints under discussion. By developing a trust in instinct and intuition, and the naturally expressive and moral potential of these personal resources, social science research can become richer and more human. A few closing words of caution. Some academics would rather incorporate the language of what we are doing into their own outputs without ever challenging either their own thinking or outputs. They subsume the language of performative social science, but never really re-examined their own routine techniques or dissemination methods. Our developing terminology is, in this way, incorporated within standard academic journal text rather than through any meaningful reinvention of research methods or diffusion. Most of all, however, let's be careful not to implode performative social science through an overblown sense of what we are all about. In our enthusiasm, let's not be too quick to anoint ourselves as poets, actors, dancers, or magicians. If we do eventually earn those titles, I'm sure that others, more qualified to judge, will be sure to let us know. Thank you.